based upon human dignity, the nature of a human person, that we protect certain human rights.
Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And then amongst these human rights, the very first one is going to be the right to life, and then the right to liberty, especially religious liberty, and then how freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly and association, how these things actually hang together or they fall together. That a society that doesn't respect the free exercise of religion also will tend not to respect freedom of speech or freedom of press or the right to life or rights of private property, that these civil liberties tend to hang together.
You can meet and hear Ryan Anderson making the case for our first freedoms at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org.
Whether you kind of fundamentally care about reproductive rights and access, right? Because again, these are not the same thing. If you care about social justice or economic justice, agency, you have to care about this, right? It is not a disconnected fact to Justice T-Shirt of 1973 that American women entering the labor force from 1970 to 2009 added $3.5 trillion to our economy. Right? Like the net new entrance of women. That is not disconnected from the fact that Roe became the law of the land in January of 1973. So I think whatever it is that people say they care about, I think you can connect to this issue. Of course, I would hope that they would care about our equal rights and dignity to make our own choices. But if that is not sufficiently persuasive, hopefully, kind of some of these other arguments that you're hearing expressed so beautifully will be.
That's Chelsea Clinton speaking recently at an event in New York City called Rise Up Roe. She has made, it's not exactly an argument, she just tried to draw a correlation between a economic boom since 1973, women entering the workforce to the tune of $3.5 trillion, and the passage of Roe v. Wade. Is it an economic argument? Does it bear the weight of the real history here? And what kind of morality is behind that argument? Joining us to respond to Chelsea Clinton's recent comment about abortion and economic growth, Jeff Jacoby. He's a graduate of Boston University Law School and a columnist for the Boston Globe, author of a recent column titled Chelsea Clinton's Twisted Argument About Abortion and Economic Growth. Jeff, welcome to Issues Etc.
Todd, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
I have heard pro-lifers argue that we have robbed the U.S. economy, the future of Social Security, all sorts of economic structures of massive amounts of manpower and income and production since 1973 by aborting so much of the U.S. population. I've never heard pro-choice arguments, to my knowledge, for the economic benefit of Roe. Is this the first time you've heard it?
I haven't heard the argument made the way Chelsea Clinton made it. That is to say, I haven't heard pro-choice, pro-abortion rights people say that it's good for the economy overall that abortion can be had so easily in America. The economic argument that they usually make is Roe versus Wade and legalizing abortion eased economic pressures on poorer women who find themselves with an unwanted pregnancy. And, you know, there have been all these studies that they put out that say if you look at the economic consequences for women who have been able to have abortions, women who haven't been able to have abortions, the burden falls more heavily on those at the bottom of the ladder. But to do what Chelsea Clinton did, to say that this has somehow been a boon for the U.S. economy, that abortion, that legal abortion, that Roe v. Wade is a kind of stimulus program, that's a new one on me, too.
What exactly is her argument? She wanted to see a correlation between the two. She didn't, and she had a figure at one end of over $3 trillion. What would her argument be if you could flesh it out?
The argument she was making, and bear in mind, she was talking to an audience of people, every single one of whom agrees with her completely on the core issue that abortion should be legal and that Roe v. Wade should be supported. So she was talking to a very friendly audience, and maybe she didn't state her case as, you know, as effectively as she might have if she were talking to you and me or to our listeners. But in essence, I think her argument was, I'll connect the dots the way I think she went to do it. The economy has grown by trillions of dollars since the early 1970s. Women have entered the workforce in vast numbers since the early 1970s. Abortion in America has been legal everywhere since the early 1970s. All of those three are connected. And therefore, even if you don't care about what she calls reproductive rights, in other words, even if you don't care about the moral issues in abortion, you should certainly applaud Roe versus Wade because it has helped make possible a lot of economic growth by easing women's way into the workforce. That would be my restatement of her argument as strongly as I think it can be made. But as I went on to argue in my column today, I think that argument fails on every single ground. I think her history is bad. I think her economic argument, as you alluded to, is bad. And above all, I think the moral argument is a bad one.
Let's go through those one at a time, if we could. In terms of history, is she reading it correctly?
I don't think so. I don't think that the reason there has been an enormous increase in the number of women in the workforce is because we have legal abortion. First of all, this is not the presence of women in the workplace is not a United States-only phenomenon. This has happened all over the world the past 50 years, and it's much more than just going back to 1973. Women have been entering the workforce in huge numbers since the end of World War II. So first of all, it's a universal phenomenon, especially in the developed world. And what drove it, what's responsible for so many women now being in the workplace, of all the factors you could think of, legal abortion would be way, way, way at the bottom of the list. Far more important are things like the political ethos of feminism, the whole change in the way the modern world sees women's role in life generally. So the idea that there are kinds of jobs that women should stay out of or places that women don't belong fell by the boards with the rise of feminism. Secondly, there's been this tremendous change, especially in the advanced world, this tremendous decrease in the kind of manufacturing jobs that tended to require a lot of brute strength, jobs that were much more tilted toward what men could provide, where men were more able to compete and women were not able to compete, and its displacement by the rise of the service sector, which, as I put in the column, relies a lot more on brain power than physical strength, and where women are perfectly able to compete. And maybe most important of all is that there's been a tremendous increase in the number of women getting higher education. At the end of World War II, fewer than one out of every four college degrees went to women. Today, I checked the statistics when I was writing this yesterday, today about 60% of all college degrees, undergraduate and graduate degrees, are earned by women. So the rise of women in the workplace today wasn't caused by abortion, it wasn't caused by Roe v. Wade, it was caused by much bigger changes in society, in attitudes, and in education. So I think on that ground, on that notion of the history of the past 50, 60 years, Chelsea Clinton got that completely wrong.
How about her economic argument?
So the economic argument is what you alluded to before. She would claim, well, a lot more women can work, they can hold paying jobs because they're not burdened by unwanted pregnancies. Therefore, Roe v. Wade helped make the American economy that much stronger. As you know, and as I tried to argue in the, you know, the little bit of space that you get in a newspaper column, the cost to the economy from the loss of all those lives, there have been 60 million legal abortions in this country since 1973. And while nobody would say that every abortion prevented the birth of someone who would have become a highly productive member of society, I think it's safe to say that tens of millions of them would have been. Babies and small children have a lot of costs. You have to pay to feed them and to clothe them and to educate them and to give them medical care. But they grow up and they become productive members of society. If you take the American GDP, the U.S. economic output, and you divide it by every person in the workplace, you get an average contribution to the U.S. economy currently in current dollars of about $125,000. In other words, for every adult working in America, there's an increase in national economic value of about $125,000. That's a lot of money per person. And when you multiply that by the tens of millions of people who presumably would have been born or might have been born had it not been for Roe versus Wade, you're talking tens of trillions of dollars in national wealth that simply never got created. I'm a great fan of Julian Simon, the late economist, who argued that people are the ultimate resource for any society. It's not oil, it's not copper, it's not uranium, it's not agriculture, it's the human mind. That's the greatest, the ultimate resource of all. And if the United States population had grown by tens of millions of additional people since 1973, it's just unfathomable how much more those people would have created, how many more goods and services there would have been, how much more they would have invented, how much more art and entertainment there would have been, how many more problems would have been solved. And even at the narrow level of what they would have contributed to the public sector, the average American pays about $10,000 in taxes at all levels. Think how many billions or trillions of dollars governments would have had to spend to help care for people who need help. So on the economic argument as well, I think she's completely got it backwards. The U.S. economy hasn't blossomed because of Roe versus Wade. It has suffered. It has been hobbled. We don't necessarily see it because we're talking about the contributions of people who were never born. But it doesn't take a lot of speculation to imagine what those people would have contributed if they had survived birth and been able to become productive American citizens.
We're talking with Jeff Jacoby, a graduate of Boston University Law School and columnist for the Boston Globe. His recent column there, Chelsea Clinton's Twisted Argument About Abortion and Economic Growth. When we come back, we've dealt with the history. We have dealt with the economics. What about the morality of her argument? I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. thecleaningauthority.com.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, ad crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. Eighth century. The fourth century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008. For a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more, we'll send you a CD of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Chelsea Clinton's recent comment about abortion and economic growth on this Wednesday afternoon. Jeff Jacoby of the Boston Globe is our guest. Jeff, we've dealt with the history and the economics and responded to both parts of Chelsea Clinton's argument with respect to those two frameworks. What about the morality of her argument? How would you evaluate it? How would you respond?
Well, I think when you try to reduce something as fraught with ethical and moral considerations as abortion, when you try to take an issue as delicate and difficult as the destruction of life in the womb and reduce it to a matter of dollars and cents, you're crossing a line that even as a matter of propaganda, it's not right to cross. Now, granted, she said, in introducing her comments, you played it in the clip, she said, so even if you don't agree with us, or even if you don't care about reproductive rights, which, as you know, is the pro-choice jargon, pro-choice speak for destroying life from the womb is not a moral problem. Granted, she said, even if you don't agree with that, you ought to be persuaded by the economic argument. I wrote in the column that it reminds me of an argument that had a certain vogue a few years ago. The guys who wrote Freakonomics, you know, that book by Dubner and Levitt, it became a bestseller about different aspects of economics. The book was called Freakonomics, and they argued that the reason there was such a dramatic decrease in crime beginning in the late 1990s is because abortion became legal in the 1970s. And that was the same kind of really ugly, amoral argument, the idea that you should celebrate a change in American culture that led to the abortion of 60 million pregnancies because some of those people, had they been born, might have grown up to be criminals. Now, granted, their argument has been debunked by others, and I'm not getting into the validity of it, but just the idea that people should be looked at first and foremost as utilitarian instruments, that we don't value human life because it's human life, but rather we value it only to the extent that it might contribute to the economy or that it might end up having an effect on crime rates, I think it's just a terrible and dehumanizing way to approach this whole subject. That's what I meant when I write in the column today, that I think that on the moral argument of all, the moral ground most of all, Chelsea Clinton's argument is really, really disturbing. I don't know that we're so accustomed these days to thinking about things in these kind of moral terms, but it's a terrible thing to regard issues of life and death as though it should be looked at merely as an instrument of how do you improve the economic quality of life or whether streets are safe or unsafe. That's not the way to look at human life.
Here is what Snopes, a famous fact-checking website, wrote about Chelsea Clinton's comment. I quote, "Note that at no point did Clinton literally say that Roe v. Wade, much less tens of millions of abortions, added $3.5 trillion to the economy. She said that women entering the labor force in the decades after the 1973 decision added $3.5 trillion to the economy and that these developments were connected. Moreover, to suggest that Roe v. Wade made it possible for more women to join the workforce is not the same as saying that it was because they all had abortions." What's your response to that?
That's true. And when you ask me to state Chelsea Clinton's argument, I think that's exactly how I put it. She doesn't say abortion directly caused $3 trillion, but rather legal abortion made it easier for women to enter the workplace. Therefore, all these women did enter the workplace. Therefore, the economy grew. So I agree. I mean, there are several dots there. Nevertheless, so I don't disagree with Snopes, and I don't word Clinton's argument inaccurately. Nevertheless, I think the message that she wants her listeners to take away from her is, if you're going to boil it down to a single soundbite, legal abortion has been good for the U.S. economy. And if you're going to make that argument and leave that implication, then I think you should be prepared for people to understand it that way, even if it gets a little bit muddled in the translation.
kind of in a broader sense, Jeff, I'm curious about Chelsea Clinton's role here. She has been a pretty outspoken advocate for abortion rights, as she would put it. And she seems to be at least kind of the progressives' dream come true in terms of being young. She has that quality of being the second coming of her mother into the political realm. And as an equally outspoken advocate there and making these kind of arguments, what are your thoughts on Chelsea Clinton entering the fray?
You know, I don't have any harsh feelings about her. I want my kids to love me and to reflect my values. And I certainly can't fault Bill and Hillary Clinton for raising a daughter who loves her parents and reflects their values. I don't agree with the Clintons' values. I didn't agree with Bill Clinton. I don't think much of Hillary Clinton. So it's no surprise to me that when Chelsea Clinton speaks, I don't find myself very persuaded by what she's saying. She doesn't strike me. And these days, you know, I mean, everybody's political predictions have all been shown to be extremely fragile and susceptible of being exploded. But she doesn't really strike me as the next Clinton who's going to run successfully for president. Her mother and her father, I think, were enough for the American people. I find it hard to imagine that a major political career is in store for Chelsea Clinton. That said, you know, in certain precincts of the Democratic Party, she's a folk hero. And I'm not surprised that this Rise Up for Roe rally, they're having these things in cities all over the country. It's all part of their anti-Brett Kavanaugh campaign. I'm not surprised that they would have her be their headliner, at least in the New York event. But I don't think she's got anything like her father's native political skills. Really, when you watch video of Chelsea Clinton speaking, she comes across an awful lot like her mother. Both in terms, you know, positively, both in terms of the, you know, the obvious intelligence that's there, but also in terms of the kind of tone deaf, not really connecting with the audience, lack of warmth as well. This is a big country with a lot of clashing opinions. I'm not surprised that Chelsea Clinton and I are on opposite sides of this issue, as we would be on plenty of other issues. I'm not expecting to see her name on a ballot anytime soon, though.
Finally, then, should we expect to hear some version of her argument about abortion and the economy, especially going into Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation hearings, and if possible, when the Supreme Court begins to deal with Roe itself?
That's a good question. I hadn't thought about that. And it goes back to your very first question. So you're asking, you know, is this the next big argument that the pro-choice advocates are going to make? It's a good question. I guess the answer might depend on how her recent words in New York play. So there's pushback in the form of my column, which there's that. I don't know. I guess it'll just be interesting to see if it catches fire. I didn't find it that hard to debunk what she said. I'd be interested to see if somebody else were able to defend it and do a persuasive job. In the end, though, to tell you the truth, Todd, I don't think that the debate about abortion, about Roe versus Wade, really has ever been about economics for either side. We might argue that so many abortions have crippled the economy. Somebody on the pro-abortion side might argue that what Chelsea Clinton argued. But really, I think that fundamentally this is a question about the sanctity of life and whether life in the womb deserves the kind of protection that it traditionally had, or whether it should be regarded as subordinate to the desires of a mother or of a pregnant woman. Ultimately, that's where the real heat in this debate always comes to. It's what the responses that I've been getting since the column appeared tend to fall overwhelmingly into that category. People, you know, responding to me with comments like, you know, men should have no say in this issue at all. Or maybe when men stop getting women pregnant, then we can talk about whether women should have the right to control their own body. It's the same kind of, you know, cheap talking points that we've heard forever. I don't think anybody at this point, this late in the game, this many years after Roe versus Wade was decided, is really looking to be persuaded one way or the other. It's more about exercising political muscle, and whichever side has more muscle is hoping to prevail in the Kavanaugh confirmation. And I should say as well, I think nobody has any idea what the Supreme Court is going to do with Roe versus Wade. Even if Kavanaugh is confirmed, I would bet that it's a very long shot that there would ever be a majority to overturn it. But that said, nobody knows what the court's going to do. And the idea that the confirmation or rejection of a Supreme Court nominee would turn on a single political issue, I find very hard to fathom.
Jeff Jacoby is a graduate of Boston University Law School and columnist for the Boston Globe. He's author of a recent column titled Chelsea Clinton's Twisted Argument About Abortion and Economic Growth. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jeff, thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Todd, a great pleasure. Thanks so much.
When we come back, we're going to respond to a column in the Washington Post on the faith of the superheroes. Pastor Hans Feeney, senior contributor to The Federalist, will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Church music directors can find a new community at Prelude to Postlude, the CPH music blog. Learn helpful tips for managing music ministry and involving members, and meet the composers of some of your favorite new pieces. Plus, find suggestions of music to use for special services, and preview some of our newest works with free samples you can use at your church. Visit us at preludetopostlude.org.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Some Bible passages make us more uncomfortable than others. Take, for example, any passage about money. But just because a topic makes us uncomfortable doesn't mean we shouldn't face it head on. That's exactly what the August issue of the Lutheran Witness has done, with articles on poverty, generosity, money management, and more. You won't want to miss it. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
This is Dr. Daniel Gard, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia University Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we are committed to our Lutheran confession and heritage. Please encourage the student in your life to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.